Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the rugby podcast that officially has a longer day layoff period than Namibia does, because we get a full week. We are here as ever. My name is Robbie, or Squidge. I am joined once again by...
Elios Afuomanisopoulou. I am going to constantly complain about the fact that we only get a week off when it should be a month. I was going to blame the IRB, but it's not the world governing body's fault. It's our own. We just put this out because there's, I guess, I was going to say demand. Nobody actually wants to listen to this. It's just people, basically, you know how we have the team of lawyers? My name's Will Owen, by the way.
Eliotta, what's going on?
I've just legally changed my name. Again, we have lawyers.
You just changed your name legally. But you did play for Samoa in the 2011 World Cup. I did. Yeah. And you did infamously that weird dropout.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Where I threw the ball in it, that thing. Yeah, that was
that
me.
Mad dummy.
Yeah, that was all me.
Oh, right, I need to establish this. Is Eliotta Afuomanisopoulou one of the lawyers we refer to on the Zoom call?
Oh, that's an interesting
I've never checked. Because he's a qualified lawyer.
Yeah.
I need to know also, can he check in turn if the lawyers are all racist?
I was going to say, because we've referenced before in previous episodes about the fact that Conrad Smith and Alan Jones are both qualified lawyers.
Yes.
And I think it's canon that they're not in there. But is Afuomanisopoulou?
Yeah. I think he was in there, then he fell out with the other lawyers.
Yeah, I think we've only got 17.
He fell out
with
like 20
now.
Of the 23.
Yeah.
The 22 others. Yeah, so he fell out with them. He punched one of them, so that one's in A&E.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. It's a real, real nightmare.
I say he, this is on me.
Yes.
Because I Eliotta Afuomanisopoulou, formally, legally changed my name because I'm a lawyer, so I can do that very easily because that's how law works. Basically, if you're a lawyer, you can do what you want very easily and there are no legal repercussions. That's how it works.
Absolutely. The remarkable thing is that man who grew up speaking, you know, a different language as a first language speaks with a Midlands accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm very versatile. However, and please, I am Will Owen now, you know, that's
cool. Okay.
That's my past, you know, the time. That was my previous life when I did that weird kickoff in the 2007
You're like Prince.
World Cup.
Yeah.
I am basically Prince. I'm basically, like, you know how many times David Bowie reinvented himself?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Effectively what I have done, you know. Like, remember the time when I scored that try where I touched the ball like 6 times against Bath, maybe, for Gloucester? Yeah,
sure.
That was my past life. I don't really talk about it anymore, but, you know. Anyway, from what I was saying is that we've obviously got a lot of lawyers. However,
the lawyers are the equivalent of the spiders from Mars.
Yes, they are, yeah. Yeah. We also have a bunch of employees who play this podcast, and basically they just play it in really big headphones and put it on people's ears in the streets.
When you say play this podcast, we also have the team of actors who recreate everything we say dramatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Cate Blanchett's one of them now, actually.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, twice Academy Award winner, Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, I did think I saw her hanging out with Carly Rae in the backstage before we start recording this.
They get on so well. It's one of those things that you wouldn't have thought. You wouldn't put those two together, but the moment you hear their friends, you go like, oh, that makes sense. I bet they'd get on.
Yeah.
Carly Rae Jepsen and Cate Blanchett.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, all of the many rugby players that we've referenced probably are listening to this. Oh, yeah. I mean, P-Money we've had on the podcast. I mean,
P-Money,
he unfortunately couldn't make it backstage today because he's in prison. But, you know, whatever. But
As friend of the pod, Jamie Ward tagged us in, P-Money and Scribe are doing reunion content in December.
Oh, yes.
They're doing a gig together.
Of course. Yeah, genuinely, like, if... Oh, wait, no, it's in December. That's next month. Never mind. We've still got a pandemic going on. I would say Pod Social, because I'd love to go, but Alas.
One day we'll get the chance. This has been almost entirely in jokey and weird.
Yeah.
We should probably introduce the idea of, not that I mind it, but
as I say, no one chooses to listen to this podcast. There's just people putting
it's shoved on their ears.
Yeah.
/ they're just massive fans of Cate Blanchett and they want to see her latest work. Today, the idea with this podcast is we're supposed to talk about Wales 81, Namibia 7.
Yeah.
This was a game of rugby played during the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It was Wales' third game. However, this was Namibia's final game of the World Cup.
It was. It's a sad
goodbye. The first
goodbye.
Team we have to wave goodbye to
is Namibia. It's a shame. And especially, like, there's something quite telling about, like, their team selection, not to quickly segue into that, but you can tell that they've wanted to give everybody who's not yet had a game a go. So, like, on the bench, like, there's a few people, like, David Philander goes on to be a pretty good player, placed them in the 2015 World Cup, and maybe 2019? I can't remember. And, like, there's a player on the bench called Waka Kazonblaze. Waka Kazonblaze, maybe. Like, he sounds like he should be friends with Cate Blanchett as well.
Why?
I don't know. It just seems like some kind of, like, big Hollywood star kind of, like, alias kind of name, you know?
I don't know about that. Waka Kazonblaze sounds like a tribe king in the Muppets.
Maybe that's it. I say it's some kind of Hollywood alias. It's Fozzie Bear's alias.
Hey, Ben. No, it doesn't work.
It's his other life as an arsonist.
Because Blaze.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I'm glad we clarified that. Good, good. You've completely thrown me off track there. Shall we mention the teams then? As you say, Namibia made some changes, but they've still got largely a strong... You know, I think this is not far off their strongest team. They've got that back row. We'll get onto Team Du Plessis as we go on.
Yeah.
Jacques Berger starts.
Yeah.
And I remember before ITV's coverage watching this game live, him saying, you know, if we don't beat Wales, I want to give them a really good game. Which is, A, nice of him. And him smiling and grinning as he did it. But also there's that kind of attitude throughout Namibia. You know, they're here not to make up the numbers. It's not like Canada saying we're just happy to be here last year. But there's something of like, we want to give the opposition a good game rather than we want to beat them.
Yeah, yeah. He never discounted the idea of beating them, you know. Good time to get your first ever Rugby World Cup win is in your final game against Wales. But yeah.
And like, I remember Ed Fairhurst, who was the Canada scrum half at this World Cup, in the lead-up, saying, if we don't win it, I think New Zealand will. Which is, I love that as a showdown.
Yeah.
I love that, I love him backing himself, but also having a level of realism about it.
Just somewhere between optimism and defeatism. I love it.
Yes.
You can somehow force into both in the Venn diagram.
Which is exactly what you want from Canadian, or you expect from Canadian rugby.
Yeah.
So yeah, so Namibia do have at 10, Tynes Kotzer, our favourite, the hero himself, who, kind of guttingly, I mean, he doesn't get many opportunities to drop goals in this game.
Yeah, it's a shame. He does have a couple of cracks at penalties, but
he has two long-range penalty shots,
yeah.
Both of them when Namibia are upwards of 20 points down. Yeah. And he just goes, "Woo, you know, we're within 60 metres, I'm having a crack, I'm having a go, lads." And they go, "You're right, Tunis. You crack on, mate."
By the way, this is just me thinking of ideas for this podcast on the fly while we're recording. Mm-hmm. At the end of this, shall we sort of do a quick overview on like our favourite players from Namibia in this World Cup? Or something like
end
that.
End of this episode?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's their final.
Let's
yeah,
do
it's their final
let's
hurrah.
Okay, we'll come on
like,
to that.
Yeah, a leaving do for Namibia at the end of this episode.
sure. Okay. The Wales team, however, is largely changed from the teams that played Samoa and South Africa, which were unchanged for those two games. But they keep in kind of a spine of first-choice players.
Sure.
In order to, or experienced players at least. So Sam Warburton starts, Talibe Faletau starts, John Davis starts. They then have like Stephen Jones comes in, who is second choice at this point, but has 100 caps.
Ryan Jones, Lee Byrne, both come in. Alan Wynne-Jones
Jenkins. Yeah, Geoffin Jenkins comes back from injury to play.
Yeah.
So they have this kind of core of important players. And they do, the moment they get the bonus point, bring them off.
Yes.
So the moment the bonus point try is scored, Sam Warburton comes off. John Davis plays the rest of the game, but you kind of have like this sudden changing. You know, Geoffin comes off not long after. They just go, no, we're done. We'll move on. This is happening.
There's also something very fun about when Wales are already 50 points up, then bringing on like the first choice players like Reece Priestland and George North, and they're just coming on and just utterly taking the piss. And there's something great about that. which were obviously.
And they also, like, Faletau comes off, and they move Alan Wynne to six, because Alan Wynne-Jones is completely indestructible, yeah. And they don't want to risk Faletau or Warburton getting injured, so they play a back row of Ryan Jones at seven, Andy Powell at eight, and Alan Wynne-Jones at six.
Yeah.
Which is, there's no balance to it, but I love it.
No, yeah, for sure. It's just three big lads who will just hit anything. So it's a very functional back row in this game, I think, when your team's already going very, very far forward. So
absolutely. So before the game kicks off, and I think there was an assumption largely that Wales will win this comfortably.
Yeah.
Namibia had a four-day turnaround from their previous game.
Crikey.
Which is absurd.
Yeah. I don't know why Daryl De La Hart wasn't speaking up about this on Twitter, but...
I know. Well, do you know how long there was between their first and last game?
How long?
14 days.
Wow.
They played them in just over 2 weeks.
It's also kind of funny that we've been doing this podcast for like 6 months and we're like 2.5 weeks into the tournament.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we barely worked. And yeah, because they played in the second game of the tournament. Yeah. And then from there, third game of the tournament. Yeah,
give them credit.
And then a done by game 28, 29. I've got both of those slightly wrong.
doesn't matter. No one's listening.
I really feel for Namibia. They are Cape Blanchet fans. I really feel for Namibia because things are really stacked against them. However, I want to throw up a stat that I don't know which version of the game you watched, what commentary you had.
I had the Australian commentary. I had Gordon Bray commentating.
Yes, the word feed version. It was on YouTube.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah. I began watching that. I then switched back to watch ITV at some point because that copy keeps looping certain points.
Oh, God, that was really annoying.
There was, like, time loop bits where it was just over and over going.
It told me, we know about Halfpenny. We know about Halfpenny.
We know about Halfpenny. Inside ball, we know about Halfpenny. Inside ball, we know about Halfpenny. Inside ball, we know about Halfpenny.
And, like, I looked in the comments for that video and it says, like, I know we know about Halfpenny. Shut up.
There's another bit at the end of the game after Lee Burns' try, right towards the end, where the commentators start talking about Halfpenny, and I think they're looping because it just keeps saying the same things over and over to each other. Like, he's a very good, solid player. He doesn't make mistakes. He can play fullback. And the next one goes, he's a very good, solid player. He doesn't make mistakes. He can play fullback. And the next one says, he's a very good, solid player. He can play fullback. And he doesn't make mistakes. So there's some variety.
Fair play. Good commentary.
But no, my favourite moment from the start of the commentary, because as I said, I switched between that and the ITV commentary, where they had Michael Owen, who might be the most boring man in Wales. And let me tell you, there is some competition for that title. But Gordon Bray introduces the game saying that Namibia only has a population of 2.3 million. And from there, they only have 1.2 million registered players. Which is more than half their population, according to Gordon Bray, are registered rugby players.
That can't be right.
He's got that massively wrong. That more than half the Namibian population, this includes the elderly, this includes children, this includes women, this includes everyone, are registered rugby players.
And they've never won a Rugby World Cup match, despite the fact that 50%, like, if you live in Namibia, right?
Yeah.
Of everybody you meet, there is a 50% chance they play rugby.
Yeah.
Currently play rugby
as
well.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, are currently registered, yeah. So that include, what statistically, one of your two grandparents will play rugby in Namibia.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly not true. Yeah, it clearly slipped up on the numbers somewhere. But also, it definitely is true.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's canon. Yeah. So, in the Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective cinematic universe.
Yes. How many lawyers in Namibian?
I mean, do we have Gordon Bray to offer up some stats on what percentage of people in the world are Namibian?
Yes, hello, it's me, Gordon Bray. Here we go! Seeing some stats on the Namibians.
You've just brought back an incredibly traumatic memory about Gordon Bray.
Rugby 04. Should we talk about Gordon Bray's commentary
talk
in Rugby
04? So, Rugby 04, the video game. We had this on PC, and we were probably playing it, to be honest, not long before this Rugby World Cup happened, because there wasn't the Rugby World Cup 2011 game, and we just wanted something to play. And we couldn't even play against each other. We were just, one of us would play, the other one would sit over the shoulder, and we'd just swap at half time or play a game, one on, one off, whatever. Because we enjoyed watching even fake rugby that much. John Inverdale was the main commentator, and I think we've spoken about this before on a previous episode, that his...
Scores the try.
A spot-on impersonation. And on the back, it said, commentary comes from John Inverdale and Gordon Bray. And we didn't know who Gordon Bray was at this point.
Nope.
We did end up looking him up and finding out that he was nicknamed the voice of rugby, much like Bill
McClary. Australia.
Yeah.
Yes.
However, there was just one point when we'd been playing the game for probably a couple of months by this point, and one of us had pressed the kill the ball and give away a cynical penalty button.
It was probably me. Like that's the sort of thing I do when playing a rugby game. I do that all the time.
That's true, actually. Yeah, you are more likely to do that. And the referee calls over the player and starts telling them off by just weirdly shaking his hand. And I'm gesturing
to
you.
It's horrifying.
Right,
yeah, it's hard to do justice to in audio, but he pulls this kind of horrible face that's like, it's like something in a horror film. When you see someone possessed and they pull this kind of really unanimated face, which is sort of a smile that's unnerving. And he stretches his arm out completely straight and just starts waving it slightly from side to side.
And I think we could both probably quote Gordon Bray's commentary, what he always says over that when you're getting told off by the referee, word for word. Do you want to do this?
Go on. No, go on, go on.
He more or less says, "Well, this is one of the great mysteries of the game of rugby union. The back row."
Back row.
Except an Australian accent. But it doesn't even sound like it, because obviously the computer's muffled his voice so badly that it doesn't sound like Gordon Bray at all.
He then keeps going. So he then, because it's not like most sports games will have a couple of lines of commentary. Yeah. They'll have like a line where they'll go, one of the true mysteries of the game is the back row. And then John Inverdale go, "Yes, that was a cynical penalty to give away, Gordon."
Yeah.
Except it isn't. There's like a soliloquy.
Yeah.
Where Gordon Bray goes on
of each of the three back row positions and their roles,
and it's a solid like two paragraphs he reads out.
Yeah.
And it will cut it off mid sentence if you skip the cutscene of the referee telling you off. But if you don't, it will play in full, and there will be like 3 minutes of Gordon Bray explaining the Seven's job is to get over the ball and try to slow it down or turn it over.
Meanwhile, the referee stood here really creepily looking at you and shaking his hand at you.
Pulling the same face.
Yeah, until Gordon Bray's finished his
soliloquy. Yeah. Yeah, they're not disturbed by the referee that stood pulling the same face, shaking their hand with arm fully outstretched like a bloody Nazi salute, tilting their hand slightly. Like, it's like how the Queen waves, you know.
Yes.
That kind of, that's what the referee's doing with its hand. The Queen is doing a royal wave with her arm completely straight out in front of them.
It's very creepy.
It is. You can't really do it justice.
No.
There's so much in Rugby of Four that I always want to talk about because it's so ingrained in my memory.
Yeah. We need to revisit that someday.
We do. We should do something on that.
Yeah, for sure.
We should. I think I bought a copy of it on PS2.
Yeah.
So we could probably do a video on
this. We bought basically every rugby game that's ever existed, didn't we? With the intention of one day doing something on this. So I feel like this is the birth of something.
Yes. I might as well mention it. We were due to, but it got cancelled due to COVID. Mm. We were going to do a thing. We went up to Glasgow and played against, Hugh Jones was definitely in, and a bunch of other Glasgow players at Rugby Video Games, but it all fell through. It didn't happen in the end, which is a shame. Hopefully it'll happen again one day.
Yeah.
But alas, it didn't. Should we move back onto this game?
Yeah, sure. I don't know how we got that far off track, but yeah. Anything more you saying about Gordon Bray there, or do you want to just...
There is, as they introduce, we should mention the referee. The most handsome man in the world.
Oh my God.
Steve Walsh. He is glorious and beautiful.
Yeah.
Gordon Bray does refer to him as being formerly from Waikato because he's obviously re-qualified to be an Australian now.
I think Eleasa Fomanisapolu helped him change his identity to Steve Walsh from Melbourne rather than Steve Walsh from Waikato.
If only he was Steve Walsh from Windhoek. Because then he would be technically a rugby player.
That's true. Well,
unless he's one of the other 50%. Yeah. One in two.
Yeah. But no, it was very good to see Steve again. I've missed him very much.
Mm.
Maybe that's why he always looks at the screen, because he thinks it's somebody else that's really handsome up there, rather than himself.
He's trying to work out if it's him or evil Steve who doesn't play rugby.
Yeah.
The Namibian... Maybe there's two Steve... There's a Steve Walsh from New Zealand, a Steve Walsh from Australia. And it's like the prestige.
Yeah.
Like he had to kill the other Steve in order to
take over. Oh, yeah, so he's watching him.
He's always watching over his shoulder in case the other Steve Walsh appears and kills him.
Do you think it's
the
like
Steve from Melbourne or Steve from Waikato?
Do you think it's like the like a weeping angel? Like when he appears on the screen, that he becomes a weeping angel.
You can't see him.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he's just always checking. He's just always checking. Like he could be anywhere. It's like it follows. Like the other Steve Walsh follows behind very slowly, trying to catch up with him and not give a forward pass.
If you stop looking at Steve Walsh, he becomes like ever so slightly less handsome. So you have to always look at him.
It's why when he retired and he went into just business, he was so vague because what he's actually gone into is hunting down terrifying creatures from the Nether Realm. He's actually trying to hunt down his alternate self, who has been tracking him for years, and he managed to finally overthrow and take over when he became an Australian. However, little does he know, they're still hunting him down. The Steve Walsh Chronicles on NBC this Thursday.
We miss you, Steve.
Desperately. I hope your business is going well.
Yeah.
One other Gordon Bray moment from quite near the start of the game. Do you know what I'm about to refer to?
Yeah, I do.
Go on.
Is it to do with Tavis Noyle?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay. Do you want to crack on?
So, Tavis Noyle does a box kick, which is a very innocent moment. And Gordon Bray says, Tavis Noyle, his father Bryn Mawr Williams toured with the Lions in 1969.
Spoilers. Gordon Bray got dick of the day for that for me. I was going to save that back, but...
Not at all.
But, yeah, like, he's not even factored in the fact that Wales' replacement scrum half's last name is Williams. And also, looks identical to Bryn Mawr Williams.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't... So Lloyd Williams comes off the bench for his second cap.
Yeah. Who is Bryn Mawr Williams' son? His real son.
Yeah, Bryn Mawr. And as you say, looks so much like him. The resemblance is so strong. And they're basically the same player if you ever go back and watch rugby from the 70s.
Unless there's something we don't know about Bryn Mawr and who Tavis is, and Tavis's mother or whatever. I don't want to make any more...
No way Tavis Noyle's father is present. Look at that man. He's not a man with a strong male role model in his life.
Let's talk about Tavis Noyle because, I mean... I'm aware that we have a lot of listeners who are from outside of the UK. I say listeners, we have employees putting headphones on people outside of the UK. This is an international mission.
Kate Blanchett, Australian actress.
Exactly. So Wales genuinely had a scrum half whose name was Tavis Noyle and remains Tavis Noyle. And he still plays rugby to this day. But to be honest, I don't think he needs to say anything more. His name is Tavis Noyle.
Yeah, so...
Not Travis, Tavis.
So Tavis Noyle, I remember there was an interview with him on Scrum 5 when he was first coming through, just before this World Cup, where he, I think we might have mentioned this in another
Yeah, bit. I think we mentioned this when we were talking with Ben James, yeah.
Yeah, where he referred to forwards as not being very bright, and you've got to tell him what to do. And he said that the name Tavis means son of David, and his father's called Di, so he named him.
Of course. So his dad's not called Bryn Mawr, after all.
Exactly, yeah. The only thing we do know about his father. Do you want something? I was looking up Tavis Noyle. I was just like having a bit of a Google about him.
Sure.
He turned 30 during lockdown.
What?
Tavis Noyle's only 30. Because he's one of these players that you feel like, God, he's been around forever. But do you want to hit the Ospreys team on the game where he made his debut?
Go on.
So Tavis Noyle is famously one of only three players to play for all four Welsh regions in the professional era.
Yeah, of course.
The Ospreys team, he played one game for the Ospreys. He didn't touch the ball. He made one tackle. That is his contribution to the Ospreys. But the team, the starting 15, when he came off the bench, was Lee Byrne, Tommy Bowe, James Hook, Andrew Bishop, Shane Williams, Dan Bigger, Mike Phillips, Duncan Jones, Hugh Bennett, Adam Jones, Filippo Levi, Samoa captain at the time, Alan Wynne-Jones, Marty Holler, Tom Smith, if anyone remembers him, and Ryan Jones, captain. On the bench, Paul James, Ian Gough, Philo Tiatia, Jonathan Spratt, Gareth Owen and Tavis Noyle. It tails off a bit towards the end.
To be fair, what a team. But also, that team is ancient and he's got to be ancient.
Yeah, but there are players who retired 10 years ago.
Yeah. While you were rattling that off, I've just done a quick search. There are three people in Wales with the name Tavis.
Really?
Yeah. There are 2,195 people in the world called Tavis.
Right. Do we know who the other Tavises are in Wales?
I'm afraid not in Wales. It's most prevalent in the United States and the highest density in Montserrat.
Okay, cool. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah. There's 24 people called Tavis in Russia. There's a fun fact for
nice.
You.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Tavis Noyle.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about Tavis Noyle, the rugby player.
Yeah, sure.
So he was kind of billed as this nice mix between Mike Phillips and a more traditional scrum half, in that he wasn't tall like Phillips, but he was quite physical, he was quite well built.
We were desperate,
and he would
weren't
kind
we?
Of like to do that. I know. He liked to do that kind of Mike Phillips thing of engaging around the fringes and offloading and so on, but he could just pass off the base.
Yeah.
He wasn't picking it up and trying to start a fight every time he got involved. And in this game, we saw the limitations of having a scrum half who likes to do things but doesn't quite know what he's supposed to do. Like the thing I got from Tavis Noyle, and it's a while since I watched him, and I think at the time I was just so sick of Mike Phillips in the lead up to this World Cup. And obviously Mike Phillips has a brilliant World Cup and you kind of forgive him for
sure,
after
that.
But I was just desperate for Tavis to come in because he was sort of the next best player
too.
On form for the regions and so on. Tavis Noyle is everything you hate about scrum halves. In that he's clear, all of those things you go, oh, bloody hate scrum halves. All the things that they do that aren't necessarily problems, but you go, like, he's clearly an annoying, snipey little prick.
Yeah, a bit of a gobshite, isn't he? And clearly that's how he got a 9 jersey in the first place.
Clearly not that bright, but thinks the word of himself.
Yeah.
Is, you know, always, seems to be always involved, and yet isn't actually doing a lot. Every criticism you could possibly level with, a normal, bog-standard scrum half really, really stands out about Tavis
Noyle. Didn't he once get a red card for Gloucester for lamping a second row forward?
Yeah, that... That came up when I was searching him.
Mm.
He got a 4-match ban for a punch to the face.
He's a charming presence, is Tavis Noyle.
Yeah. One of my favourite bits of commentary of all time was, I think it might have been Greg Clark, it was one of the Australian commentators, which is honestly, it's like infinite monkey syndrome in saying something great.
Sure.
But a winger getting sent off for a punch for 10 minutes, and he's saying it's a winger punch, it's only be worth 5 minutes. And I get a bit of that with a scrum half punch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you only get 4 weeks for a punch.
Yeah.
Should be 8.
Yeah.
But who cares?
I respect that.
He also, of course, played centre for the Blues in a European semi-final.
Yeah, this is... That's a very...
We're on like a Tavis Noyle career retrospective.
Yeah,
I don't know how this
we
happened.
We could do a podcast on this.
Yeah.
Obscure Welsh
again,
scrum halves.
Again, even if you people want to have that shoved on their ears as they're walking into HMV in Australia. So... Should we talk about the game itself?
Yeah, we've not.
Which we're half an hour in, we haven't mentioned the game.
Wow, yeah.
Actually, no, right, I'll do my one final point on Gordon Bray, and we'll get this out of the way, right? I don't know if you caught this. I couldn't quite believe what I heard at one particular line out as he gave the not straight, okay?
Okay.
Did you hear that?
No, what did he say?
Let's play that again. He's a tough fucker, Steve Walsh.
No pity on the Namibians. He's a tough fucker, Steve Walsh.
Yep, he seems to. And he kind of stumbles over like the between the U and the C. So you can't 100%
he laughs to style it out, right?
Yeah. But he doesn't apologise or anything. There's no like there's none of the apologies from, you know, the slip of my language. He just rolls on with it as if nothing happened.
It reminds me of, on the flip side, the time when it was the year after this and the Springboks played against the Pumas in Argentina. And it was, I think, Pat Lambie kicked the ball really low and it just skims over the top of Steve Walsh's gorgeous hair. And then you can hear Steve Walsh on the ref mic really loud going, "Oh, shit!" like that.
He was a sheer icon.
Yeah.
I remember hearing a story about there was a Tongan tight head played in like the 91 World Cup.
I think
called
I know
Fuka.
Where this is going. Yeah.
And there was apparently that all the BBC commentary team were told just to avoid saying his name. And so I can't remember who it was, but there was someone then deliberately dropped him in a thick Scottish accent. So it sounded
Didn't
like.
Didn't he get sent off? Wasn't that it?
Yes,
called
it
him
was
a Tongan tight head all game. Then he gets sent off and someone just goes, "Oh, silly fucker." Like that.
Yeah. Which is a great punchline to that bit. Right, we're half an hour in now. We can talk about the rugby.
Yes, we've unlocked the ability to talk about rugby. So
Wales win 81-7. So they do all right, don't they?
Yeah, pretty good. They score some tries where they do some rugbies. Should we just go through some of the tries?
12
in the first
tries.
Half?
12 tries in all for Wales.
Yeah.
Sure.
So Alid Brew scores a try very early on. where Bradley Davis offloads to him, and it's just
We didn't mention Alan Brew was playing.
Oh yeah,
he got too caught up in Tavis Noyle. Like it's like a wonderland of average rugby players for the Welsh region from the noughties or that late noughties who had a patch of form. You know, like Tavis Noyle, I mean, Alid Brew, Lloyd Burns was playing. Craig
Mitchell.
He was
a bricklayer 18 months ago.
Exactly. All of these players were players who were regional standard players who had a patch of form somewhere in the late noughties and managed to get into the Welsh team from there.
Yeah.
Ryan Bevington, same story.
Yeah.
Andy Powell had a stretch of form that stretched into the Welsh team. You know, he had great stretch of form for the Blues and then managed to continue it for Wales. He was kind of almost an exception. Yeah. Yeah, he was a character. Yeah, it's a kind of mad, like it's a really nostalgic looking Wales team, and there's a lot of players that anyone who doesn't watch the Pro 14 will have forgotten completely.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Alid Brew scores a try. I don't want to get too sidetracked until, you know, we'll get sidetracked again later. And basically, Wales, you can see, are probably looking to try and start the bonus point in the first half. They don't quite manage to do that in the end. Faletau scores Wales' third try on the 17th minute, at which point you can tell that this is, by the way, Toby Faletau is 20 years old during this match.
Yeah.
And this World Cup, I guess. But you can tell that this match is a bit too easy for him because like he kind of gets the ball and dissects two Namibian players and just kind of goes over very easily. And he isn't really expecting to score from that opportunity.
No.
But yeah, and then Namibia managed to hold out Wales until half time. So that's, you know, they do a lot better to get back into that.
Yeah. They suddenly start getting a bit of the ball and they start, you know, Kotze starts doing his thing and Yankees as well at scrum half. They do the kind of shithouse keeping them out of it, like keeping the score down thing.
Sure.
And there's not, they have one good chance, but there's not that much great rugby from Namibia, but I quite enjoyed watching how they went about it to say they were 22 points down.
Well, the back row really stood out for Namibia. One of the great mysteries of the game.
Mm.
Tinus du Plessis, do you want to talk about him now or later?
We might as well touch on him. Tinus du Plessis, I did think, had a good game.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Got a couple
he
good
is the Namibia 6. Normally, I would be more infused about this, but for the fact that he completely inexplicably was given man of the match.
Yeah.
His team lost 81-7, right? His contribution was that he made, to be fair, he made 19 tackles, which is very impressive. Yeah. I'd say, like, he was
very good, yeah.
Very good. He was very good. But you do kind of go, Scott Williams scored a hat trick. Like,
yeah.
Bradley Davis was absolutely, you know, we'll get onto the man of the match contenders later on. But,
I also think that Tinus du Plessis was the second best member of his team's back row. I think Jacques Berger was absolutely everywhere. And
Jacques Berger was brilliant.
Honestly, Jacques Berger might have been the best player on the pitch. And like, not to sort of completely go against you just saying, yeah, his team lost 81-7. I'm very aware of that. He's one man in 15, you know.
But, and also, there's something about, because Jacques Berger is that inspirational type cap. He's the captain.
Sure.
In that way, when Godse got man of the match against New Zealand,
yeah,
it was sort of in honour of the whole Georgian team.
Yeah.
And then really standing up. And like, Godse was brilliant. But there was something of, because he's the captain, he's the nominee for this award. And because he's the talismanic leader, he's the one player on that Georgian team a lot of people knew the names
absolutely,
of.
Absolutely, yeah.
He was the, you used to talk to all those All Blacks fans, Godse was the one player they knew.
For sure.
You know. There's something of that with Jacques Berger, in that he is this talismanic leader. He's the one player that plays in Europe here, pretty much, other than, obviously, two-time IB Trial of the Year nominee Chris Underboat is having his spell with Exeter just after this.
Yeah.
But yeah, And also, he has that hair and he has that kind of quite iconic look. And you know when you can see Jacques Berger when he gets involved.
Yeah, he stands out quite a lot, doesn't he? But he did kill a couple of overlaps. There was one where Gethin Jenkins had the ball. I think there was one with Jonathan Davis where...
Almost guaranteed try if Gethin's got the ball.
Yeah, exactly. We're nearly there. We're nearly ready to talk about that. So yeah, no, Jacques Berger had a very, very good game. In fact, why don't we move on to the first try after half time? When Namibia kicked the ball out of play, Andy Powell takes a quick throw in, which he looks
We have quickly before we move on.
Yeah,
just a couple of things I want to pick up on the first half while we're going through it.
Yeah,
Scott Williams' first try, which is very nice.
Yeah,
because it does. I think this game and the following game, or these kind of run of three games of Namibia, Fiji, and Ireland, are probably the best rugby Wales played under Gatland.
Yeah, yeah,
like the best attacking rugby.
Yeah, the most attractive rugby. I guess.
Yeah. Because they were winning games playing quite nice rugby.
Yeah.
In a way they didn't, you know, when you look at the rest of their career, rest of Gatland's career of Wales, they would win games, but they did not play nice rugby. No. Every now and again, they score a nice try kind of by default, just because there was space somewhere.
Because the good players, yeah.
Yeah, but they were playing with actual flair in this game, and yeah. It kind of comes from the off. There's obviously 10 minutes of softening them up. Then Scotland scores, I think, 8 minutes in.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely try from 60-odd metres. You know, Lee Halfpenny, fantastic.
Yeah, we know about Halfpenny.
Scotty
yeah.
Rouse on one. Scott Williams at this point as well. He played like 4 games for the Scarlets.
Yeah, he was very inexperienced.
Because he was called into the Welsh squad for the Six Nations. He was called up having played 1 game for the Scarlets. Mm-hmm. He played a couple of times at the end of the season.
Yeah.
After getting into the Wales team and playing against the Barbarians. And then, yeah, from there, went on to be really good against the Barbarians. Squeezed his way into the squad because Gavin Henson got injured.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. Like, it was... When Scott Williams scores his try, he looks so happy.
Yeah, he's elated, isn't
and
he?
First it's, try for yeah, Wales. First try for Wales, yeah. First start for Wales, and he looks over the moon. And it's great to see him, A, happy, and B, not injured, because I'm not used to seeing either of those things lately.
Yeah, no, of course. And it's just cool thinking that this kid's like 6 months away from scoring the winning try at Twickenham. Like,
yeah. And there was something of that about Scott Williams at the time, before he went through all the injury hell and the being dropped as captain and so on. When he was at the time, what, 20 years old?
Yeah.
21, maybe? As I say, he'd been playing for Wales in his 20s the previous year. He'd then come in pretty much out of nowhere. No one knew who he was. He was kind of very much like this little village kid from, you know, small town in Carmarthenshire.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere was suddenly scoring tries for Wales at World Cup, that where they were playing fantastically well. And there was something really inspirational and sort of, not moving, but lovely about seeing him do that.
Yeah,
like I really enjoyed watching Scott Williams in this game and
yeah, for sure.
The rest of the tournament.
Yeah, because he was just sort of a young kid who was quick, who was willing to take people on, sort of thing. And that was kind of his identity in the Wales team at this point. And it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
However, fleet-footedness brings us on
yes.
to Gethin Jenkins. Go on.
Okay, so let's start right at the beginning. I think you've gone too far back. Okay. Wales scored their fourth try.
Yeah.
Okay. And immediately off comes Sam Warburton. He's hauled off. You know, Scott Williams scores a second try, which is a really shit try.
It is, isn't it?
Where three Namibians go in to make a... Yeah, they make a big hit on him, kind of stop him dead, and all of them think, oh, this guy will bring him to ground, and just let him go, and he just walks straight through to the try line.
Terrific.
Alan Wynne gives him a little shove as he goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Wales got their try. Instantly, Sam Warburton comes off, and on comes the man, the myth, the legend, Andy Powell.
Yeah.
Andy Powell, moment he comes on, first involvement, line out, takes the line out, drops it off the top, lovely ball. Wales crash it up in the middle because Gatlin ball. And then they work it wide. And who should be out wide but Andy Powell himself? Again, Powell takes the man, he offloads, bam, Wales spread it out. Lee Halfpenny out on the wing, puts in a lovely little, smart little kick that he'd never do nowadays, chases it himself, manages to catch, I think it's Darmes, who's opposite, who's chasing back, covering. Yeah. And Namibia then get none of their forwards get back. They've got no blockers in place. The ball kind of spills out, and Yankees, the scrum half, is only able to box kick kind of straight up in the air. It lands. He managed to get a pretty decent distance on it. It lands just shy of the 10-yard line. And from there, Wales take a quick throw to Jonathan Davis. What happens next?
Jonathan Davis performs this lovely switch move with a man, a loose head prop, named Gethin Jenkins, who's for
it's a fly off. It's a fly off.
A fly off. Yeah. Who is in the backfield for some reason. Like, why is he in the backfield?
No, okay, if you look at it, and I went back and watched this again, because you can never get enough of this.
No.
Because it's played quite quickly, Gethin is lazy. And he's involved in the lineout, and he's then kind of just hovered about.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's coming back from injury. And also, because he's Gethin, he fancies himself as being great at everything.
I was going to say, he needs to tell a fullback how to do his job.
Exactly. The infamous chip into the corner against Argentina.
Yeah.
From 45 metres when he perfectly dinks it into the corner 5 metres out.
Yeah.
He fancies himself as a fullback. He fancies himself as every single position.
Yeah.
And this was his go at showing counterattacking is really
and
easy.
And we've all heard stories from the likes of like Nicky Robinson and so on about the things he says to fly halves when they're not quite doing their jobs.
Or the looks he gives them.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's probably about right that he took on responsibility and did this himself. So he takes the switch pass and he first off steps one of the Namibian backs.
Yes.
Second off, he throws a dummy to no one, which is bought. Next, he does a little shimmy inside somebody, I think. And he keeps running. He's found a bit of a hole. He's crossed the 40-metre line. He's crossed the 22. And he's only got, like, four more people to beat until he gets the try line. Then, you know, what happens next?
And Gethin, clearly, up until now, has been thinking, I'm going to have a go here. You know, I'm going to give it a shot. And then the moment he's broken through the line and he's well into the 22 and he starts eating up more and more of the ground, you can clearly see it set in on his face of like, oh, I'm going to make it. I'm going to do this. And so he just goes, you know what? No more of the tricks. Head down. And he charges. He kind of goes between the two tacklers coming across and straight into, I assume it must be two-time Ivy Try of the Year nominee, Chris Underbota, who's right at fullback, right on the try line.
Yeah.
He just charges straight into him. And of course, carries him over the line, showing a perfect all-round game.
He's been dragging Tynes Kotsur on his back like a backpack for the last like 10 metres as well. It's really funny. It's a really like, it will go down forever on one of the great like prop try compilation sort of things. It's phenomenal.
And because it's a prop try, because it's a loose head prop scoring a try, obviously, two of the three commentators on the World Feed version say that'll be a 60-metre try by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And like, no, it was.
Yeah.
It actually was. He scored, he took the ball on the 40-metre line, on the, He took the ball with 40 metres to go. That's a bloody long way. That is a long-range try.
Yeah, for a winger to score driving over from 1 inch metres without needing to pass. This, like, let alone for a prop.
Yeah, he's basically halfway. He's ran pretty much half the pitch to score this. And yet, because it's a prop try, two out of the three commentators need to make the same joke that they always, always make.
Yeah. And then after he's scored it, there's a load of the Welsh players are kind of like laughing and coming up to him like, yes, Gethin, yeah, nice one, and sort of having a laugh about it. And Gethin isn't having it.
Yeah.
Gethin's like wanting them to like stop giving him like almost like they're patronising him, giving him like pity for being a prop.
Patronising,
like, no,
yeah.
This is my job. Like, I just do this. You know? And, like, he's really, like, grumpy about the fact people are congratulating him. Like, it's not the norm.
Yeah. It's like, you wouldn't have reacted like this if Halfpenny scored.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? To be fair, if Halfpenny barreled someone over the try line and carried someone with him, they bloody would be.
It's like, Shane scores tries all the time. And
but
no,
that's why Halfpenny isn't the greatest fly half wears I've ever had.
True.
But then, no one celebrated Ali Brew's try, so I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe just no one liked Ali Brew, bless him. I hope they do.
I hope they did. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely glorious. And did you notice what Gethin does next on his next touch after the try?
No.
He pops like a one-handed offload out of the back. Like he takes the ball on like a, you know, like a standard crash up.
Of course he does.
You know, standard like pod system, whatever. And he instead transfers it into his other hand and flicks it out the back to someone running in behind.
Of course he does.
In like, he's popped the cork. Like, he's like, what of it? I'm the best player in the world ever.
Yeah.
And therefore, and I genuinely think there's a good shout at that. I genuinely think Gethin Jenkins might be the greatest player of all time, pound for pound, the greatest rugby player anyone's ever seen.
I don't agree with that, but he was very, very good.
I think he might be. Right, he can... Dan Carter could score that try, but he couldn't scrummage.
Yeah.
Richie McCaw couldn't do either of those things. Come at me, bro.
I think we should move on.
Because it is a hell of a 5-minute period for front row fives.
Yeah. So there's a point not long after this where George North, as I say, has come onto the field with Rhys Priestland. And in fact, no, it was just before Priestland North came on. But North come on and he scores this pretty nice try. He takes a short ball and sort of dives over, like not long after coming onto the pitch. And it's one of those where it's like, oh, he's too big, he's too fast, he's too strong. Like, this knackered Namibian back line aren't really physically up to stopping him on the game line, and he'll break through and score tries.
Yeah.
And so what Namibia think is a good idea straight from the kickoff is, let's just kick it to North.
No. Before you move on from that try, did you notice Geffen's involvement?
No.
Okay, so the phase before North scores, Geffen Jenkins has been lying injured in the middle of the pitch for a few phases.
Yes.
He's just been lying there, and they're kind of, you know, the players worked around him, and the referee doesn't call time off because it's Steve Walsh and Jouet. And then there's a ruck right next to where Geffen's injured, and he kind of shepherds the medic away, gets up, clears out the ruck, and then North scores, and he goes back down and invites the medic back on.
Oh, hero.
Because he is Geffen Jenkins. Yeah. He is magnificent.
Yeah. Legend.
Sorry, okay, so yeah. George North then scores that try. Yeah.
And Namibia just decide it's a good idea. Like, let's just kick it to George North again, straight from the kickoff.
Yeah. And you know that really big, quick guy?
Yeah. And so he obviously just makes a break straight from there. Does this really weird offload where he sort of does it underneath his left armpit, and it somehow comes out on the right-hand side to Alwyn Jones, who loops the ball over the top.
It's a trick shot, isn't it? He's trying to do, like, one of those, like, fancy trick shot thing, trying to, you know, like when you're trying to throw a rolled up ball of paper into the bin.
Sure, yeah.
And you do it all fancy like that. George North does an offload like that.
Yeah. And the ball lands in Alwyn Jones' hand, who loops this pass over the top to Jonathan Davis, who scores.
Hmm.
And it's a really good try.
He properly throws a dummy here.
Yeah.
Like, it's he's got men drifting, he's got men outside him, he's got halfpenny.
It's his trademark outside him. In a way.
Yeah. One of his trademarks, because I'd forgotten about until rewatching this game, Foxy's other trademark at the time, which was the Foxy Grubber.
Mm.
The absolutely pointless grubber he used to do all the time that never worked. He used to, whenever on the end of an overlap, he would thread through a really pointless grubber that never worked and always blew the opportunity. And I forgot he had that habit until watching him do it twice in this game.
Mm. And yet there was a point when Ryan Jones did a grubber kick.
Yes.
Which perfectly worked for him, which went about 20 yards and he dives on it himself. And he just kind of like doesn't make a show of it at all or anything. But yeah, no, Jonathan Davis scores this try. And so Namibia, from the kickoff, think, okay, how about change of tactic? We'll kick it to the guy who stood next to George North, who obviously passes to George North, who makes another break from the kickoff. And a bit of time elapses. And then eventually, from a clearance, Namibia end up kicking to Lee Byrne, who goes most of the way, sidesteps a few people after a bit of a sort of them spreading it wide, and then offloads to George North, who scores himself. And so Namibia then think, okay, we've got this. We'll kick it to the guys just in front of George North, who, you know, they crash it up, and then Wales give it to George North on second phase, and he makes a break.
And the other thing is, George North is stood in the same place all the time. Yeah. It's not like they're moving about to wherever he happens to be. They just keep kicking to the same spot and thinking, it's going to be better this time. Or they
kick
must
it
have
to
moved
brew,
it.
Lads.
They
kick it to brew.
But they must be trying to double bluff them or something. Think like they won't think we're going to do it again.
Yeah,
they must be not expecting this one. It's like no, they were. This, unlike the back row, is not one of the true mysteries of the game. If you kick to George North, he will make a break.
Yeah.
If you kick with him and you don't chase and follow up, he's going through.
Yeah.
However, we have skipped over one of the, and those are all great moments.
Yeah.
But one of the truly iconic moments of this game.
Go on.
Which comes just a couple minutes after Geffen's try. As I began to say, it's a great 5-minute period for type 5 forwards.
Oh, yes.
Because we've talked a lot about Wales, but we haven't talked enough about Namibia. And in particular, their second row pairing of Nico Esterhazer and Heinz Kol.
Yes.
So, Wales are in that fall, Geffen just scored a wonder try, Jouet, Steve Walsh's referee, what can possibly go wrong way. They just begin randomly shipping the ball on because there's some space wide, and they're not really looking where they're passing. They've just gone like, there's width there, let's get it to George. That's what Namibia are doing. We need to take a tactic from their book because it's working well. Stephen Jones does not look where he's passing because where he's passing is straight into Oosterhuizen, who is, of course, the Namibia lock. He takes the ball, he intercepts it. And then what?
He delivers this lovely offload to Heinz Kohl, his second row partner. And Kohl, you know what? In this try, Kohl has a lovely like running style. He runs like genuinely a bit like an inside centre at this point. But even though he looks slightly lost in the broken field, but he looks very good doing it. But I think it was Donny van Veek, who started on the wing, was playing the centre at this point, runs a hard line off him, ready to take the ball and sort of...
Like a switch.
Yeah, yeah. Ready to sort of to run the ball in because he's got a lot more pace than Kohl. And Kohl instead throws the dummy and runs in behind in an almost crossing, but not quite crossing sort of a way.
Sure.
Van Veek. And, I mean, first off, he sells this dummy because Alid Brew, who is covering the Wales backfield, instead of thinking about the fact Kohl still has the ball and has just ran behind the man, he has about 2 or 3 seconds where he sees Van Veek running towards him, and he completely changes his line to just completely body Van Veek into the floor, but also taking himself out the game in this completely illegal shoulder charge he's just done. And Kohl now has nobody in front of him, and he runs like 40 metres to score this lovely try.
And he rounds his man, he runs for the corner, and he has a clear... It's one of those where he has a clear run-in, but you're still kind of shouting him on because it's a second row running 40 metres.
Yeah,
and we have two Type 5 forwards, and both of them, you know, neither of them are like Richie Gray, Richie Gray at the time, style like Brody Retallicks, who love running in open pastures. Both of them are like boiler house workhorses.
Yeah.
And both of them score glory tries where they throw a dummy.
And Heinz Kohl becomes the first ever Namibian player to score two tries in Rugby World Cups.
Yeah. And then there's another record broken from the conversion. As Tynes Kotsa, having previously missed two shots at goal, lines up this conversion from the touchline. And of course, he absolutely nails it.
Yeah.
And that makes him Namibia's record point scorer at the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
As well as breaking their record, which he'd already broken, for a single World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Speaking of records to do with Namibia at the World Cup.
Okay.
Scott Williams scores a hat-trick in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little bit of research at Namibia at World Cups. So as of 2011, as of this game, you know, not including more recent World Cups, 2015 and 19.
Okay.
How many hat-tricks do you think have been scored against Namibia?
So every team in this pool scored one against Namibia?
No. Every team apart from South Africa, because they're rubbish.
Oh, of course, South Africa is shit, aren't they? Right, okay, yeah, I forgot that. No, didn't Bryce Lawrence score a hat-trick against them? He was South Africa's best player at the World Cup.
That's true. That's valid. How many players...
No, you're very right, yeah.
Take a guess. How many players at all World Cups have scored a hat-trick against Namibia?
So, this was their third World Cup. Let's say 8.
9.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And for reference, this was their fourth World Cup. They first qualified in 99, been to every one since.
Of course they have. Of course they have. Yeah, because they... Yeah, yeah, yeah. So hold on. So Arzona Tuolangi, Scott Williams.
Yeah.
And Nicky Gonover.
Yeah.
Then I'm trying to think, was it... Oh, they played Australia in that infamous game where they scored... Australia scored a billion
Australia
points.
Won 142-0.
Yeah. Chris Latham, did he...
Chris Latham did. Now, this is my next question I was going to ask.
Chris Latham.
At Rugby World Cups, can you also, while you're doing this, guess who the top three try scorers against Namibia are?
In so Latham? World Cups.
Latham has scored 5. He scored 5 in that game.
He scored 5 in that game.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's in second place.
So who else was in that Australia team at the time? Lottie Tchikuri?
Lottie Tchikuri scored a hat trick in that game.
Nice.
There's
okay.
One more hat trick in this game.
Perfect. One more hat trick in this game. So, because it's that weird. I'm trying to think who else would have played. I've never watched that game. So, like, because it's sort of the Stirling Mortlock era, where Mortlock's the guy.
Yeah. I'll give you a clue. It was a utility back.
Matt Gitto.
Yes.
Because he was
Gitto scores a hat-trick.
Come fly half in this tournament. Yeah.
Other players who've scored a hat-trick against Namibia include Ugo Mola.
Okay. I would not have got him.
Nope. And Martin Gaitan, who I don't know, scored a hat-trick.
Okay, I don't know him. No. Not personally, anyway.
No, yeah. So, who do you think are the first and third top try scorers against Namibia at Rugby World Cups?
So, sorry, Latham.
Latham second.
Latham second?
With 5. You can guess.
Will it be
third.
Someone that's... It's not... Is it any of the players I've mentioned so far?
Third is a player you mentioned.
Tchikuri?
Nope.
Gitto?
Nope. 2011.
Tuolangi. I was on Tuolangi.
No.
Oh, Gonova scored four.
Gonova scored four.
Of course. Gonova scored four. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't know
top,
that. Right.
The top try scorer of all time against Namibia at Rugby World Cups is that bastard penalty try.
No! Oh,
he has scored seven tries against Namibia at Rugby World Cups, including in that Argentina game aforementioned. He scored two tries in that game.
If you're the referee, you can't do that. How miserable is that?
But I looked at this game and saw penalty tries got two tries. I wonder what they were doing to infringe. And of course, I'm sure one day this podcast will, you know, will go and do 2003 and look at this. However, playing number seven for Namibia that day, Lion Tamer, Skull van der Merwe. So I can only assume he was responsible for at least one, if not both, of those penalty tries.
He threw Lottie to cure in a lion enclosure.
Yeah,
and they just went, look, mate, it's not in the rules, but we're giving a penalty try. It's the least we can do. He's got bite marks in his hands. It's like bloody Scott Baldwin all over again.
I've also found out that Scott van der Merwe is capped at inside centre and on the wing, as well as flanker.
Wow. What a life that man's led, man.
Yeah.
What
a player. Line tamer, centre, winger, flanker. He can do it all.
He's just a phenomenon.
You know how World Rugby post those videos where it's like players and they say, he can do it all?
Yeah.
It's like that, where it's like, oh yeah, he can do a big tackle. He can score a try down the wing. He can throw a 17-year-old in a lion enclosure. And this, they show footage of all of them. He can shrug off prostitutes. By the way, if you have no idea what we're talking about, listen to our episode, which was, who was it, Namibia against South Africa?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk at length about him.
Do you know he invited Angelina Jolie to his lion taming sanctuary?
Did he?
Yeah. I looked this all up. I was reading about this after the episode went out, and I was going to do it on a future Namibia episode like this one, but I forgot to put those notes together. But yeah, he had Angelina Jolie visited his lion taming sanctuary, and there's a photo of the two of them together with a lion.
Wow. This is serious.
This is serious. He's like, he's mate of Angelina Jolie. Yeah.
Right. We'll do a deep dive on this when we eventually do like 2003 or...
Yeah. Whatever. Oh, he is just the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
The biggest character in rugby, I think. There's not a story you could attribute to him, like beating up prostitutes in the hotel and the qualifying match. Like, there's nothing I wouldn't believe.
Hero.
I've got no idea if he actually beat them up or just intimidated them.
Yeah,
but,
let's not make allegations here.
Let's not.
Should we get quickly back?
Throw a 17-year-old in a lion enclosure.
Yeah, allegedly.
Because they allegedly stole the sheep.
Yeah.
So
get quickly back to the game.
Sure.
So yeah, Priestland comes on, is very good.
Yeah.
He does this like crossfield kick that's so good. Ryan Bevington outpaces somebody to get onto it.
But you know, the men out on the wing were Ryan Bevington and Ken Owens winning his first cap.
His first cap, Ken Owens.
Yeah. Really young Ken Owens. Really young looking Ken Owens. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because I think him having strange. Not really aged, but I think he sort of aged very quickly over the first kind of, like, maybe 3 or 4 years on from here, and just remained the same since.
Yeah, and it was a long time coming, Ken's first cap here. He'd sat on the bench for 80 minutes against France the previous year,
2010.
Yeah, when Hugh Bennett was having a nightmare throwing into the line-out, and they didn't bring Owens on. And he'd had really good form for the Scarlets up to that, and had finally earned this cap at the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, he'd come through as... You know, as a solid player the season before the Lions for the Scarlets, he's come through. And then it was when, post the 2009 Lions tour, they started Ken Owens because Matthew Rees was kind of being rested for a set period post-Lions tour.
Yeah.
Because he's had a, you know, elongated season. And Ken Owens was suddenly incredible. And Ken kind of established himself as being this great player that was very unlucky not to be in the Welsh squad.
Yeah.
That autumn, you know, probably should have been.
He, of course, won the Magnus League Try of the Year.
Of course he did, yes. Well, he kind of popped up on the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was glorious.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels... Because he spent a long time where everyone felt he should be playing for Wales, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then when he finally started playing for Wales, there was a long period where people felt he should be first choice, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he's now been first choice for about 5 years, and he's Wales' most capped hooker, it's kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of all feels very deserved, and I'm very glad it's worked out the way it has for him.
Very happy for him. And he looked like he was having a lot of fun playing for Wales, finally. Like, he's obviously dreamt of this, being the most Welsh man in existence, to finally get the opportunity to do it. And now he's Wales' most capped hooker, so you can't not be happy for him, can you?
I don't think people from outside Wales quite appreciate how well-loved Ken is.
Yeah, he's
Because he is
a national treasure.
He is. He's the Welshest man in the world. I've heard stories about his dad as well, who is a big character.
Yeah.
He's genuinely one of the most beloved men in the country, because he's this weird wholesome presence in a kind of bastardy way.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. Everyone loves Ken, and it's so good to see him, even as a wee boy, winning his first cap.
Yeah, I just was happy for him the whole time he was
Was.
Yeah.
And Bevington as well, who kind of had this weird career, because he was always talked about as one for the future, and then this was his bit, you know.
Yeah.
This weird burst of form when he was like 22, 23, which for a loose head prop is weird. That doesn't happen very often for loose heads.
Yeah. So we'll just quickly finish off the Welsh tries. Lloyd Williams scores from a dominant scrum from like 10 metres
out. Yeah, Andy Powell, great offload, puts him in the corner.
Lee Byrne scores from it's a really lovely try where Priestland really like brings so much shape to the Welsh back line. And Byrne passes to Halfpenny, who offloads back to Byrne, and it's a really nice finish of that score.
And Byrne spends the whole time as they're celebrating it afterwards, just almost apologising to Halfpenny and kind of rubbing him and thanking him, because Halfpenny played really well and was everywhere.
Somehow
and seemed to be involved in so many tries, and just didn't score.
Yeah.
Because he's on this long run of not scoring tries.
Mm.
Despite being a really prolific try scorer, he then, in 2011, just had a run of games for the Cardiff Blues where he was very good still, and he had a run of injuries as well. Yeah, where he was injured and he was playing, and he was he was playing well, but he just wasn't scoring.
Yeah.
And it felt like there was some sort of curse here that he was so many times in great try scoring opportunities and he was the one giving the final pass.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, it was quite strange seeing, you know, the sprightly young lad that is Lee Halfpenny. He was just a very quick winger who can sometimes boot a ball over from 60 yards and thinking, this guy's going to become fullback soon.
Yeah, we also had a version of this conversation earlier, but I think Lee Halfpenny is massively underrated generally these days again.
Agreed.
And I think he's a a lot of people are kind of overly nostalgic about this period of his career when he was a really quick winger, as you say, who occasionally booted them from 60 metres. I think he's such a better player nowadays.
And no
I
doubt.
Don't just mean it's not I don't just mean by 2013 to 2015, that kind of peak period of his career. I mean, like 2020.
Yeah,
and the form he's been in since the lockdown restart has been phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
And no one's talking about how great he is.
A skill
people
that
are still. Go on.
A skill that is really underrated of Halfpenny's is, like, people don't sort of talk about this in rugby as much as they do in football, but, like, people's sort of speed off the ball rather than just on the ball.
Yes.
And Halfpenny's is phenomenal. Like, because he's not always sprinting in tries from 60 metres, that doesn't mean he's slow. Like, the amount of space he covers, because, like, when Andre Pollard kicks the ball at you, the ball travels very fast. And Halfpenny, like, has the ability to cover a lot of space on a rugby field, and he's better than most fullbacks in the world at that.
Oh, anyone else. Only Rob Carney's anywhere close to him, I think, in terms of Villy LaRue, Ben Smith, very, very good. But I think Halfpenny and Carney are the two best at covering the backfield and marshalling it I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's become such an important skill over the last 3 or 4 years since that kind of Andy Farrell 14-man press came in.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely vital. And I think he's wonderful and a great all-rounder player. And he was fantastic back in this period and back, you know, the 2 years before where he was first playing for Wales and he was, you know, scoring those two tries for the Blues winning the EDF Energy Cup. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where I first picked up on Freddie Burns being a geezer that game.
Oh, wow.
Post-match, Freddie Burns comes out and says, we just weren't good enough. I think he was about to say, like, we were shit, and then corrects himself because we were very bad. And it always stuck with me because normally players went, oh, you know, we stopped, it just wasn't our day or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was just like, no, we were rubbish. Yeah. And like, we need to be better. They're a better team than us. And I was like, I like this lad. I like Freddie Burns. And he turns out to be the biggest geezer fly off in the world.
Yeah, he's a legend. We love
the video of him speaking Japanese. What a guy. What a guy. Have you not seen that?
No, I don't think so.
There's a great video of him, because he's just arrived in Japan. There's a great video of him speaking Japanese. Really awkwardly, but he's clearly really learnt it. Love Freddie Burns. Anyway, course, this is completely off track.
As this episode goes out, it will be Friday before Wales play Ireland, and Billy Burns is on the bench for Ireland to get his debut, and Freddie Burns has said that he's, as soon as the pubs open, he's going to go and get pissed, ready to see his brother make his debut. So by the time you're listening to this, Freddie Burns will be a few pints in, which is great to know.
I love that. So, I think, is there one other... Oh, we haven't mentioned Scott Williams' third try, which is fine. It's just a good finish in the 22.
Yeah, he fades on nicely.
Yeah.
He's given Scott Williams a lot of credit. And Alan Jones
And Alan Jones.
a lovely try. Well, I say a lovely try. It's a drive over try where somebody tries to take him by the neck and he just kind of goes, no, if you're going to do that, if that's your attitude, you're coming with me. And he grabs the ball in the process.
Yeah. There is a moment in this game, actually, where Steve Walsh gives a penalty for a high tackle. It's like, in 2011, the amount of high tackles we've seen let go, and Steve Walsh, of all people, gives one. Yeah. It was on Lee Byrne. It was incredible. I couldn't quite believe it. But yeah, Alan Wynn takes his try well. You know, Alan Wynn very good throughout the game.
Yeah.
Which I think is one way of leading us on to the closing segment.
So, I've said my dick of the day. My dick of the day is Gordon Bray for thinking that Tavis Noyle's father is Bryn Mawr Williams. Who's your dick of the day?
Yeah, so I think that's not a bad shout at all, and also for just swearing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a couple of really strong contenders.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is very much Tynes Kotsur repeatedly kicking to George North. And I think I love him, but I think he has got to be my dick of the day for that.
Okay.
And that's been in my head the whole time. One of them has to be the IRB for playing this 4 days after Namibia's previous game.
Yeah.
Which is genuinely just unfair.
Yeah.
And I had someone else as well, but I have completely forgotten it.
My other nomination was Steve Walsh for giving a penalty for squeeze ball in a Rugby World Cup match.
Like, incredible.
It becomes legal at like under 16s level.
Yeah. That's amazing. Do you know what? Okay, the other thing. Steve Walsh, the Italy-Russia game that we talked about before, we didn't mention this because I didn't know it until here. Steve Walsh was due to be the touch judge for that game, but he pulled out the morning of the match ill. Reed hungover.
Yeah. We've all heard that one before.
Knowing his reputation, Steve Walsh saying his words were apparently, "I'm under the weather."
We all know
which
what that
could
means.
Mean I'm very hungover right now.
Yeah. Man of the match.
Man of the match. Sure. Okay. Again, I think there's quite a few contenders. Oh, the other dick of the day contender is Lloyd Burns, because I did not remember this, but he was shite.
Was he?
He was bad. He kept giving away penalties and just knocking the ball on all the time. And every time, yeah, he was just, and he seemed to just be fuming
being
with
really
everyone.
Good.
So did I. And it was one of those like Amfinger moments of him just being like, oh, he was bad. Right, okay. And then Ken comes on and the word is all right and the word is perfect and lovely. So yes, yeah, so anyway, man of the match. Again, I think the Namibian back row are very good. And I think Lloyd Williams and Andy Powell are both excellent when they come on. I think they're both fantastic once they come off the bench. Priest only plays about 10 minutes, but I thought he was good as well once he came on. George North, obviously. However, at the time, I remember thinking my man of the match was Jonathan Davis. I remember thinking he was the best player. Watching it live back at 7 a.m. It was a 7:30 kickoff.
Of course, yeah. No, this is... I'm just going to quickly touch on this, actually, because you were in sixth form, so you were okay, but I had to get to school midway through the second half, and I was late for registration because Ken Owens had just come on. I was really buzzing about it, so... I was late into school on this day because of Ken. So,
no, I think I think we left together. I think we left about the same time. Yeah, but yeah, no, it was because I think I then watched the last 20 minutes on one of the computers in school.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Because I didn't have to be in registration, but I had to be in for a lesson like 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
So I was able to watch the last 10 minutes, but there was a period that I skipped, and then we all watched back in the evening. I remember we'd recorded it. Watched it back. Everyone.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Faletau, obviously excellent whenever he was involved.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of torn on my man of the match, and I know where I probably have to give it. Because I think the best player on the pitch, weirdly, and I didn't see this one coming, was Bradley Davis.
He was great, yeah.
He was absolutely everywhere. He was throwing offloads, he was getting involved, he was throwing passes, he was popping up on everything. He did absolutely everything, played 80 minutes, was fantastic. So I feel like he is my man of the match, but also I think I'm going to give the man of the match award to Geoffrey Jenkins. Because
it's rude not to.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't not reward Geoffrey Jenkins for the finest moment in the history of rugby union.
Much like why I gave Hunter Pomy dick of the day last week. It's obligation. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's our civil duty.
Yeah, no, that's entirely fair. In terms of my man of the match, I have also written down Jacques Berger. I think he was just absolutely everywhere. Like, him coming off the line killed so many Welsh attacks. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
I think George North had a great impact when he came on and, you know, set up so many tries, scored a couple himself. Rhys Preston, likewise, I know he only played like 15 minutes, but my God, he was good. Like the depth that he brought to that line was outstanding. And yeah. Faletau, as I say, it seemed too easy for him. He didn't play as much of the game. Again, I know I've just named two substitutes, but yeah, Faletau was, yeah. was brilliant. Scott Williams, Gethin Jenkins, again, great for try-scoring. But my man of the match is Alanwyn Jones. I think similar to what you're saying about Bradley Davis, that he was comfortable wherever he was in the team he was put, whether he was put sort of in the back line or whether he was doing tight carries. He looked so comfortable and making tackles and everything. And just it's very typical of Alanwyn Jones to just be really hungry no matter what the score is or who the opposition is. So my man of the match is Alanwyn Jones.
I can't argue with that. I figured it was one of the second rows for me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think about Alanwyn, but I thought Bradley Davis, I should probably. But then I went for Geffen because I had to go for Geffen.
Sure.
So that brings us through this game. However, this match does of course mean we see off Namibia and we see them home. Yeah. And so, welcome to welcome to the Namibia goodbye party. I was trying to play Atmosphere by Russ Abbott, but it wouldn't play. Apple Music won't let me play Russ Abbott.
I think that's for
like
the best.
A party with an atmosphere.
I think that worked out. To stop people doing it to themselves.
Woo-hoo! I know that's not the lyrics.
I've just googled what the national language is in Namibia so we could say bye to them. And their national language is English. So.
Right.
We have to say goodbye to Namibia. Keep the music rolling if you want.
Absolutely.
If I'm going to nominate their best players in this World Cup, to say, you know, thanks to them, Jack Berger, obviously, two-time IB Tribunal nominee, Christander Botha, was great. And one other player who I didn't really see play outside this World Cup, but looking back on this, I remember at the time really liking him, was Danny Van Veek.
Yes.
Yeah. I think he had a really good World Cup.
No, agreed. I mean, it's as we've said, Jack Berger is very much their absolute talismanic man. You know, he is that team in many ways, and he's one of those players that often you'll have commentators will only talk about one player over and over again. And in this case it was kind of justified that he was so much better than the rest of that team, bless them.
Ty Scotts was the other one.
However, you know, my favourite player, Ty Scotts stands as my favourite. One of my favourite players of all time, frankly, because he played like the proper shit-ass fluff I'd want to inspire. Like, if I was running a team, if I was whatever, if I was a DOR somewhere, I would assign him instantly off the back of this World Cup. Yeah. And he went on to play a bit in the Curry Cup, but he didn't really get the
I think it's criminal how little right. pro rugby he ended up playing, because he's such a good player.
Yeah.
But, to quickly nominate, you know, because I'm trying to remember what dick of the days we've had for Namibia. Mm. I think that Jacques Nivenhouse's attempted throw-in against Fiji probably would make him the Namibian dick of the tournament for me.
Oh, of course, yeah. But, I'll quickly have a look if there's any Namibian dick of the days. There must be. I mean, yeah, Jacques Nivenhouse. Ty Scotts has man of the match, but not dick of the day. Okay, no, that's fine. Yeah, so he is the only Namibian who's been nominated for a Dick of the Day.
Oh, fair play.
So, fair play.
And
you know,
just pause the music a sec. Okay, one final thing from me, speaking of Namibia. Chad Plato is so nearly on Zebra's books. Like, the chain of tweets which surrounds at Plato Chad on Twitter. There's a massive chain of tweets where people have responded to his only tweet, which is a response to Sky Sports Premier League with a full stop. But and we've all done it. You know, Sam Lana's done it. Linebreak Rugby have done it. You've done it. I've done it. And like a load of other people have done it. And we've decided, we said at the time, if the tweet gets to 25, Chad Plato has signed for Zebra. And that's just non-negotiable.
Yeah.
A few people have made the mistake, and even since we brought this up since, made the mistake of just replying to Chad Plato's tweet. Don't do that. Don't reply to Chad Plato's tweet. Reply to whatever the last tweet is on the chain. And I guarantee you, you'll have like 20 people like your tweet because we'll all get a notification from it. And we'll all be buzzing about it.
Yeah, you've guaranteed it's like a walk-in, some likes. Have we checked with Zebra whether they're okay with this?
No, doesn't matter. We'll do worry about
okay, cool. Yeah. Who's Zebra's coach? I was going to say Michael Bradley, but I don't think it is anymore.
No idea. Not checked with Chad either, obviously.
No, obviously. No, he'll be fine with it. You know, he's still obviously playing in like it's Namibia or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I think you just need to definitely go ahead and join. Oh, shut up.
Nice.
There you go. There's the joke. It didn't quite work as smoothly as I tried to time it well, and it had some buffering. We do not have a PRS license, but I'm not going to complain about that. I'm going to be very quiet.
Look, if Stevie Nicks wants to sue us, then we've got 17 lawyers.
What if he did? Yeah, absolutely. And Eddie Oxford and Miles Napoleon might be one of them.
Did you just call Stevie Nicks he?
What did I say?
You said, what if he did?
Yeah, I did. No, I was referring to Fleetwood Mac. Oh, I was referring to, you know, Mac. Yeah, Fleetwood Mac, yeah. His name is Mac, yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
Mac, and he loves Fleetwood.
The Mac bit of Fleetwood Mac's name is named after a woman.
No. Okay. Mac's a boy's name.
Oh, okay.
We all know this.
Okay.
No, it's a jacket. Like, it's a jacket. We all know Fleetwood Mac is a jacket. It's a jacket
potato,
made of wood.
Jacket potato, yeah.
No, it's like a Mac. It's like a cagoule, but it's made of wood.
We've been going on for too long,
haven't we? Really fleeting.
But it was good of Fleetwood Mac to turn up and headline the Namibian leaving party.
Yeah. We wanted Carly Rae to come, but he didn't want to do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
We bloody get Cool and the Gang in, and they're not even headlining. They just came and played that. Like, they came and did that. You couldn't see it, because, you know, it's over Zoom, in it, but if you're listening, Will here could see Cool and the Gang came into my flat, despite lockdown, and played most of that song until you said stop the music. At which point they're all going home now and they're packing up and leaving. They've been here all afternoon. I had to keep making them cups of tea.
It's fine. We've got more lawyers than them, so we can win any.
Is that how court works?
It's how court
you need the most. It's like Advance Wars. It's like, how many little soldiers do you have?
It's like, you know, winning seats in a political party. You know, it's a similar sort of thing to that. That we've just found the ability to pay that many lawyers that we'll just be sound. We can do whatever we want. I'm actually like naked in public while I record this podcast.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you're just in the street putting headphones on people with your cock out.
Yeah, exactly. And we're in national lockdown, man. I've just robbed Tesco as well. Like, I've just got like six TVs in the over the course of this podcast. But
it was,
guess what?
Like, the lawyers were so the police were so confused, like, including herself, Sting, were so confused when they said, anything you say can and will be used against you. And you said, I think Tina Duplessis had a great game. They're like, he's got us. How do we use that against him?
Oh, what a podcast.
Much agreed. Much agreed. We were hoping to have a guest for this one, but it all fell through. Yeah. So you've had to make do with whatever this has been instead. So much great apologies for that. We are next. Oh, man. I almost don't want to tell you the result of the next one, but you'll know anyway. The next game is Canada against Japan, which is a banger.
It is a banger.
It is a great game of rugby union. Again, I believe it's all on YouTube. Should all be on YouTube.
Yeah.
You should be able to watch that if you like. Proper Rugby World Cup match. Great game. I rewatched quite a lot of it for the Japan video I did quite recently. So I'm able to go back on it again. But yeah, it's a proper game. Well, it's like, I really enjoyed this Namibia game, but I think I enjoyed it because I like Wales.
Both sport Wales, yeah. Watch them win. So,
And I quite like seeing nostalgic old Welsh faces of either really young Ken Owens or seeing Tavis Northern and Ali Brew.
Yeah. So thank you on behalf of me to all of the Tavises in the world, all three of you in Wales, and anybody who has been forced to listen to this. We're talking to the employers now, making sure that all of the Tavises hear this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you very much to you, Tavis.
Yeah.
And to you, Tavis. And to you, how many did you say there were?
Three in Wales.
Three in Wales, that's fine. Yeah, we've done those already. We've already thanked them. How many in the world? Because there's international.
Like, several thousand.
Right, we better get cracking then. And you, Tavis, 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 and you, Tavis,
if
and you, Tavis.
If all the Tavises put a full stop on Chad Plato's tweet, he'd be playing for, like, Toulouse by now.
And you, Tavis, and you, Tavis, and you, Tavis, and you, and we need to get through the Tavises.
Yeah.
Again, the lawyers said that we need to make all the Tavises. And Tavis, and Tavis, and to you, in particular, Tavis, I'll see you next time. for Canada against Japan, but also to you, Tavis. I'll see you afterwards. And to you, Tavis. And to you, Tavis. And to you, Tavis. And indeed, even to you, Tavis. Thank you very much, Tavis. I'll see you next time, Tavis. And also you as well.
Bye, Tavis.
Cool. And Tavis.
And Seed.
And Tavis.
Let me end this goddamn episode.
And Tavis. And Tavis.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.